welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Thank you very much for joining me today on the show. And today's show is going to be all about tennis gear and equipment. We're going to have master racket technician Jeremy Plumley on the show with myself, and we're going to be answering questions from listeners of the podcast. Before we get started, I just want to remind you guys about a very special feature of EssentialTennis.com, and that is the podcast archives. We've now done 86 episodes of the Essential Tennis Podcast, and all of them are available for free in the podcast archives. That's over 40 hours of free tennis instruction. If you were to take 40 hours of instruction from me privately at the club where I teach, that would cost you $2,400. So $2,400 value for free. Obviously, it's not the same as private instruction, but you get the idea. Very valuable stuff at the archives, all for free. So definitely go to EssentialTennis.com, go to the podcast page, and sign up, and you can access all those shows for free. All right, let's get down to business. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. My guest today on the Essential Tennis Podcast is master racket technician Jeremy Plumley. Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a while, and Jeremy is back by popular demand. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody on the forums was asking where you were at and wanted you back on the show, and so I asked for some questions from our community on the forums and got a lot of feedback, so people have definitely been waiting for you to come back on the program. Glad to have you.
Well, you know, my mom's really happy when she hears me on the podcast, so all the money I paid her to put on there was well worth it, I think.
Well, just one question for you before we get started. How does it feel to be a certified master at something?
it does feel pretty good. It doesn't give me any more, you know, stay at home or anything, but people on tennis boards and stuff like that seem to respect my authority.
All right. Well, better than nothing. That's a good start.
I'll take what I can get.
All right. So today, Jeremy and I have taken several questions out from those that were submitted. And I apologize to those people whose questions weren't chosen. We definitely don't have enough time to get to everybody's questions here on the show. So we just picked out a couple that we thought would probably be most interesting. And our topics are going to range from grip size to string types, racket stiffnesses, stringing techniques, all kinds of stuff. And Jeremy's going to share his wisdom with us on all things gear related. So let's go to our first question asker. And that is, and Jeremy and I have been discussing the pronunciation of name here. I apologize if I mispronounce your name, but our best guess is Romulo in Brazil. And he says, I live in Brazil. I've been playing tennis for 3 years now. I just bought a pair of new rackets, two Wilson K-Blade 98s. I'm something around a 3.5 to 4.0 player. I have really big hands, and no matter the size of the grip, I still have to increase it. So the three things I want to ask are, and he's got three questions here about grip sizes, and these are going to relate definitely to many people listening who have questions about what grip size they should be using. But his first question is, because of this, I use the Sigma Grip Buildup. It's a thermoplastic that shrinks with heat. You probably already know what I'm talking about. So that grip buildup puts something like an extra 6 grams on the handle of weight. What is the effect of that weight on the equilibrium of the racket, the balance of the racket? Jeremy, what kind of effect is that kind of buildup going to have on the overall balance?
It's not going to have a lot. The swing weight increases more when you add weight up at the tip of the frame. When you add weight down at the bottom, you have to add a significant amount for it to really make a difference. And the 5 or 6 grams that the build-up sleeve adds to it won't affect your swing weight very much. About the only thing it will do, besides actually build up the size of the grip, is you might notice a more dampened feel, because there will be that little layer of, you know, polyurethane or whatever it is between the handle of the grip and your hand. So it might be a good idea if you're suffering with a little bit of tennis elbow to throw one of those on there too, just for the dampening effect. But as far as balance goes, not a lot.
Okay. Moving on to his second question, he said that the grip size on his K-Blades is an L4. And Jeremy, is that for those of us in the U.S., is that a 4 5/8 grip?
No, L4 is actually a 4.5.
Ah, okay. But he says he bought an L4, which is a 4.5-inch grip. He said that if he buys an L5, which I would assume then is a 4 5/8, he thinks that it's almost impossible to sell it later. However, with the L4, with the 4.5-inch grip and the buildup and a cushion over the grip, he says, my ring finger is only 1 centimeter from his hand. And he's talking about the kind of general rule of thumb with grip size, where when you grip the racket, you should be able to put a finger between the heel of your hand and the tips of your fingers, for those of you who aren't familiar with that. And he says that he's only got about 1 centimeter between the tips of his fingers and the heel of his hand, even with this buildup and the extra grip, etc. And his question is, should he increase the grip size even more, or is that enough? What do you think, Jeremy?
It's really a personal preference at that point. A lot of pros nowadays are using smaller grips. So the trend is to kind of go with a smaller grip. People feel they can get a little bit whippier with their strokes, with you know, if they use a smaller grip. Nadal, I think, uses a quarter or maybe even an eighth on his grip, and I mean, he's a pretty big dude, so that's one thing. The other thing is, if he wants to go bigger with those build-up sleeves, you can put 2 of them on the existing pallet on the racket without it really rounding it out too much. With 2 of those build-up grips, you can still feel the bevels pretty well. I wouldn't go more than that. So I would say, you know what, try it with the 1 build-up sleeve. Maybe put an overgrip on top of that, see how that feels. And if you kind of like how that feels, then go with that. But if it still feels too small, if you feel like you're squeezing the racket too tight, then you could put the other build-up slip on there.
Sounds good. And yeah, I'll echo just the first thing that you said there, Jeremy. Romulo, it's definitely, it comes down to personal preference. I mean, there's old rules of thumb for a lot of different things in tennis, but when it comes to equipment stuff like this, especially with grip size, whatever you're most comfortable with is what Jeremy and I are going to tell you to go with most of the time, for sure. All right, let's go to his third and final question here. And he says that he used to be using a Wilson K-Factor 6195, and that's what he was using before he switched to the K-Blade 98. And he said the 6.1, he was using a 55-pound string tension, and he wants to know, with the K-Blade being at a 98-square-inch head, a little bit bigger, what pressure should he be using? What tension should he be using on those strings to get about the same feel? What do you think?
Just having the head sizes be, you know, 3 square inches isn't a huge difference as far as hitting area. I would say 2-3 pounds on the increase. A lot depends, obviously, if he's using the same strings, that makes it easier. A lot of times, the stiffness of the frame, you know, geometry and what the composition is will give you a different effect. Something else going for that is the K-Blade 98 is an 18 by 20 string pattern. And since he doesn't say what the string pattern was on his 6195, I'm assuming it's the 16 by 18. They do make that in an 18 by 20 as well. If he was using the 16 by 18 in the 6-1, he probably doesn't need to jump up the tension. The extra strings will probably make it feel a little bit tighter as it is. If he's going from the 18-20 6-1 to the 18-20 K-Blade 98, then you should probably increase it to maybe 3 pounds.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Well, let's move on from Brazil to tropical northern Illinois, where we have Nick. And Nick's question is, my question is about racket shape. Yonex and Dunlop of Juan oval shapes, whereas Babolat and Wilson have a more round shape. Are there advantages for both shapes, or is it all marketing and theoretical speculation? I like that phrase, theoretical speculation. What are your thoughts on that, Jeremy?
You're throwing around terms like theoretical speculation. You're obviously not a tennis pro by nature, and you're obviously an engineer or something like that. You know, some of it is marketing hype. A lot of people will tell you that Yonex will give you more spin. Yonexes tend to market themselves as the spin racket. I haven't noticed a huge increase in my spin when I use a Yonex. But I will say that normally if the racket is wider, say from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, you've got a little bit more, you know, hitting area there. So in theory, with a, you know, a low to high swing, you could possibly get more spin because the ball has a little bit more space to work with there. But I don't know of any studies that have proven that. I think it's maybe just a personal preference among players. I will say that if your main strings are longer, you'll get more power. That's why those racquetball rackets a lot of times will have the main strings that will go all the way down into the grip and all the way up, because the longer the string is, the more elasticity you get and the more power you'll get. But I don't know about spin necessarily.
Okay. So is this kind of a personal preference slash feel type thing with the different shape and geometries of these different racket manufacturers?
Yeah, I would say it's more of a personal preference, because even if you look at, for example, the Head Extreme that has a very rounded head, when you compare that to a more oval-shaped head, it's not really that big of a difference. So I don't really know how much extra you would get from that minor difference. But, you know, some people, they'll feel more confident with it. So we'll stick with the personal preference.
All right. So, Nick, it sounds like we're more on the side of theoretical speculation for this one. Nick has a second question as well, and that is, as a 3.0 player, where should I have my string tension for good control without making my arm fall off?
Making your arm fall. I've never seen a racket strung that tight. I'm going to go with the personal preference argument again. What you should do is start out at a medium tension, see how that goes. Normally, a medium tension for most rackets is going to be around 60 pounds. If you feel like you don't have enough control with that one, bump it up 2 or 3 pounds. Unless you're using a really large, oversized racket, I probably wouldn't go much above 65. At that point, you'll probably start feeling a little bit in your arm, especially if you have a pre-existing injury. Really, the level player that you are doesn't really affect your tension of your string, that it might affect a little bit of what type of strings you might want to go with, but it's more your playing style rather than your actual level.
Yeah, and I would venture to say here, Jeremy, that this is a very individualized thing based on, like you were talking about, pre-existing injuries. You know, certain people, they tend to be more prone to injury. Maybe they're a little bit older. Maybe they swing a little bit differently, and it's, you know, it's kind of lending their bodies more towards injury in the arm falling off departments. So I like your suggestion there, Jeremy, of kind of starting in the middle and maybe working his way upwards. What do you think? Maybe 2 or 3 pound increments from there, and just kind of trying things out?
Yeah, I think 2 or 3 pounds is about where you'll start feeling a difference. The other thing to remember is, you know, a certain string, say, like a Wilson NXT or a Babolat XL, is going to feel different at 60 pounds than a polyester string, like Luxalon, will feel at 60 pounds. But to use the string that you're most, that you use most of the time, start with that in the middle, and then work your way there.
All right. Good stuff. And now let's go from Northern Illinois to even farther north to Howard in Canada. And he's got three different questions here having to do actually with arm falling off injuries. And he wants to know about a couple different racket specifications and tennis elbow problems, elbow/arm problems. And his first question for Jeremy is, if you have elbow/arm problems, should you be looking for a stiff or flexible racket? How would you define each category if you are using the Babolat RDC rating?
Wow. Well, first
pretty detailed.
Very detailed. First off, whenever you have an elbow or arm issue, you want to go with a more flexible racket. The stiff rackets, normally, because of their stiffness, will give your arm more feedback, more shock. So that will, you know, continue to kind of build on that injury. They feel great because they're really light, and you can get a lot of power without swinging a lot with them. However, there's just not as much material there to absorb the shock when the ball hits. So you definitely want to go with a more flexible frame.
Okay.
As far as, you know, stiffness, really, the RDC will give you a rating between 0 and 100. Wow. Mid-60s to 70 is a pretty stiff racket. However, there are some, you know, heavy rackets out there. The Babolat K-Factors tend to be a little bit stiffer. They're in that, you know, around that upper 60s limit. And they're okay for, you know, tennis elbow because they've got some substantial mass to them. I'd stay in that mid-60s range. If you went lower than that, you'd have a really flexible racket. It's probably going to be pretty heavy, which might be a little uncomfortable at first with an elbow injury until you build up a little more strength. But basically, I would just try the more control-oriented rackets to betweeners. Try and stay away from the, you know, the crossbow tens and the vocal power arms, the real thick, super lightweight rackets, and stay in a weight range between 9.5 and probably 11 ounces.
Okay. And his question number two here, you kind of just answered a little bit, but maybe you want to reiterate just for clarification in case you think you missed anything. But his second question was, assuming the same elbow/arm problems, do you look for a head heavy or a head light racket?
Well, just by, you know, the way that the market is, the lighter rackets tend to be head heavy. So I would stay with a head light racket. Maybe, you know, if you don't want something really head light, stay in the evenly balanced category. If you go, you know, 2 or 3 points head light, or even, you know, up to 2 points head heavy, you'll be fine.
Okay. And lastly, on the arm/elbow issues, he asks, how do you pick the right multifilament strain to protect yourself, and how tight would you strain it?
Any of the multifilaments are going to be pretty soft. The only thing that I would say to avoid would be, and I love the string, however, I think for tennis elbow purposes, some of the Gamma Livewire technology strings, the Livewire Professional and the Livewire Revelation, tend to give a little bit more feedback in the arm than similar multi-filament strings. Babolat XL is very good. Wilson NXT as well. Also, Wilson Sensation, which is a little bit lower price point, is a good one too. I don't think it's a true multifilament. I think there is a solid core there. But another one, if you're having a lot of elbow issues and you need something really soft, head protector string is very good. And the best thing for arm injuries, honestly, is natural gut. It's the softest stuff you can get out there. It's expensive, but you know, it's not something that you have to use for the rest of your life. As your arm gets stronger, you know, you can go back to a synthetic string. But if you're really suffering with some elbow problems, I'd give natural gut a try.
Yeah, Howard, if you've never tried a racket strung with all natural gut, there's really no other feeling like it. I personally like a really stiff string bed, so you know, I steer away from even a multifilament synthetic gut. I really don't like softer strings at all, but hitting with a racket full of natural gut really feels pretty cool. It's a very different feeling from any other kind of synthetic string. So I would recommend trying that out if you have the financials to actually be able to use that in your racket. It lasts longer too, so that kind of helps defray the cost. And then he also asks Jeremy, what about tensions? What using that multifilament strain or maybe a natural gut strain? What type of strain tension range should he be looking at for arm injuries?
Depending on how bad the injury is, if it's something that you're really suffering with, probably the mid to maybe up to about 57 pounds, depending on, you know, how soft the string is. I wouldn't go much above 58 if you do have an existing injury. But you don't want to go too low with those because they are so soft that you'll really almost feel like it's a dead string bed just because you're not going to get a lot of spring off of it.
All right, good stuff. And Howard has one other question, and I'm curious to see what your answer is going to be to this one, Jeremy. He says, how do you figure out if rackets that are based on the UTEC or similar technologies are either stiff or flexible?
Well, it's pretty easy. Right now, all of their UTEC rackets are pretty, you know, flexible. As far as the market dynamics go, they haven't put the UTEC technology into their power rackets yet. And the other thing is the D3O technology is in the throat. So you're getting a little bit of flexibility there. The technology will either stiffen or loosen up depending on how fast you're swinging. But a lot of the flexibility in the racket's going to be up in the hoop. So they're pretty flexible rackets. The Radical, the UTEC Radical, feels a lot more flexible than its predecessor, the Microgel, and actually the FlexPoint Radicals as well. I was speaking with our local head rep about a week and a half ago at a demo day, and I asked him, does he feel that the UTEC Radical is more flexible than the Microgel? And he said, yes, absolutely. It's got a much more flexible feel, and that's definitely been the general consensus among people that have hit with them both.
Okay. All right, good stuff. And we'll shift our geographical focus from north and move somewhere else completely different to Affinity in Saudi Arabia. And his first question is, as a player improves, does he or she have to change his or her strains as well? Pretty general question, but what's your answer to that, Jeremy?
Personal preference. That's kind of our buzzword for tonight, isn't it? you don't have to change your strings. If you like one particular string and you feel that it, you know, fits your game well, then you can stay with it from the day you pick up the racket till the day they put you in the ground. There are, you know, advantages to some strings that others don't. For example, if you're swinging really fast, you know, a polyester string might be good for you because it can help control it. But there's no reason why you can't, on the opposite end of the spectrum, use natural gut. Really, it just kind of depends on your personal preference. And yeah, if you start swinging faster, you might look at a stiffer string, or, you know, if you feel like you need a little bit more power, you might go with, you know, a more powerful string. But there's no definitive answer of, yes, you need to change your strings once you get to be 4.5. You can no longer use just regular synthetic gut. It's really up to you.
How about if, as you improve or as a player improves, they start to break strings much more regularly?
Well, that's, again, if you don't mind having your racket restrung, three times a week, then you can stay with that string. As you do start breaking strings more, you're probably going to want to look into more durability, into the more durable families of strings, the polyesters, the biting my tongue, Kevlar.
Yes, Kevlar.
but you do want to make sure that they are right for your game. And, most of the time, if you are breaking strings because you're starting to swing fast, you're starting to use a lot of spins, then, polyester string, a stiff Kevlar or polyester would work well for you. So durability would be a good reason to switch.
All right, good stuff. And final question for today's show. And this should be kind of a fun topic for you and I to discuss for a couple of minutes here, Jeremy. Affinity also asked, I have a neighbor who has a drop weight straining machine. Some members of our group don't like to have their rackets strung by him. According to them, it has allegedly caused them tennis elbow and all sorts of other injuries. Is there some truth into this?
I hope they weren't talking about like knee injuries or something like that that got caused.
Right.
that is one of the things that when you are a stringer, right after the racket, the strings and the stringer are the next things to get blamed if you're having a bad day.
And you know this by personal experience, don't you?
Oh yes. Stringers, particularly master racket technicians, tend to have pretty thick skin when it comes to that. And Ian, you can attest to this. There's been many a time when I've come back in the office yelling about somebody complaining about their string.
Yep.
I don't think that the machine itself would be a reason for an arm injury. Now, maybe if the stringer, the person actually doing the job, strung it too tight or something like that, I guess technically it could, it could cause an injury. I really don't think that the stringer itself could do that. I mean, even if the racket was strung 10 pounds tighter than you're used to, I think you would notice that before you had an injury, and you'd probably ask them to change it. A drop weight machine does tend to give you a stiffer string bed than a lockout or hand crank machine would, because it does constantly pull the tension during the string job, but it wouldn't be such a huge increase, and it wouldn't be any more than a top-of-the-line electronic stringer would. You could possibly argue, and I've been in arguments with people about a drop weight machine not stringing an even tension throughout the whole racket, so you could question the consistency of the string job, but not really causing an injury.
So bottom line, would you avoid, if you were a player and you had the knowledge that you do now as a master racket technician, would you ever avoid a strainer and his services just because he had a drop weight straining machine?
I would not refuse to use him because of his machine. If he is, takes care and does a good job, takes his time and doesn't try and rush through, you can get a very good job done with a drop weight machine if you know how to use it. I would make sure that I, only did one racket the first time with him, just to see how it turned out, to make sure that, it is a consistent string bed and all of that stuff. But the same thing could be said for somebody who uses any type of machine. Honestly, I'd take a guy who's done 500 rackets on a $150 machine rather than a guy who's done 5 on a $5,000 electronic. So much of stringing is really, consistency as a stringer. Some machines make it easier to be consistent, but once you get good at something on a particular machine, you're going to be able to to duplicate those results time and time again. And that's what stringing is all about, is consistency.
All right. So Affinity, you want to look for a strainer who has lots of experience with their type of machine, who has a lot of experience straining rackets in general. That's going to be much more the qualification you want to look for, rather than how good of a machine they have. And I guess good is in quotation marks.
Yeah, I mean, give the guy a chance. See,
sure.
If he strings it, and if you like how it feels, then keep going with the guy. And, you know, if he gives you a racket that doesn't feel as good as, you know, maybe one that he had done for you earlier, let him know. You know, if you don't get any feedback from your customers, you don't know if you're doing a good job or a bad job. And, you know, most people figure if they don't hear anything, they figure they're doing a good job.
Okay, so just to be clear, we're going to go ahead and call foul on the drop weight straining machine causing injuries, correct?
Yes. I am going to call foul on that. And I, as a stringer, I do take a little bit of offense that we would cause an injury with a drop weight machine or any machine.
All right. Well, that brings our questions to a close for today. And Jeremy, would you mind at some point, you know, it doesn't have to be right away, but the members who took the time to write questions on the forums, would you mind giving them quick answers and answering their questions on the forums?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll get over there and try and do that as soon as I can. And we'll try and get as many of those questions answered as possible. And
awesome.
Maybe some of them might be a little duplicated, but I'm happy to do it.
Awesome. Well, Jeremy, thank you very much for your time. Myself and the Essential Tennis Podcast community definitely appreciates the input that you're giving us. And thank you very much for your expertise.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right, that brings the Essential Tennis Podcast number 86 to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today, and hopefully what you heard was helpful to you. Real quickly, before we wrap up the show, I want to do a couple shout-outs, and my shout-outs today are going to be to our three most recent forum members, and these guys all joined within the last week since the last podcast. And this is where you guys really want to be if you want to be the most involved as possible in improving your tennis game. Everybody who posts on the Essential Tennis forums are very, very passionate about tennis. They're very enthusiastic. They love supporting each other and helping each other as they continue down the path towards trying to become better tennis players. And today's podcast was only possible because of the enthusiasm on the forums. All the questions that we answered today were posted by members of the Essential Tennis Forum. So you guys should definitely check it out if you're a listener and have not checked it out yet. So our most recent three members, and I think all of these guys actually posted in the thread where I was asking for questions for Jeremy, but B-Tran, Ramulo, and SAK are three most recent members on the Essential Tennis Forum. So I want to give those three guys a shout out. All right, that brings today's show to a close. I will talk to you all next week. Until then, take care and good luck with your tennis.